Dear listener, we hope that you've been enjoying the variety of podcasts that we have on our network. Now is your opportunity to help us by telling us a little more about you. Please visit jcastnetwork.org/survey and complete our listener survey so that we can learn more about you and your listening habits. Again, please visit jcastnetwork.org/survey. Thanks so much.
Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finman. We've got a great show for you today. In this half hour of the show, we're going to be talking about BDS, Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Against Israel, with Professor Carrie Nelson of University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. Maybe it's Champaign-Urbana. I'm not from Illinois. One of those places. We have still, it's the last week of a cappella music. Next week, by the way, is going to be music only, as next week is the holiday of Shavuos. Portion of the week is a portion of the Bamidbar, and we will be talking about the holiday of Shavuos, known as also the holiday of the Pentecost. And we'll be closing with a very appropriate, dynamic story at the end of the show, all the way, 55 minutes from now even. Before we do that, let's go right to the news. Israeli security forces arrested six members of the Hamas terrorist cell that bombed a bus in Jerusalem on April 18th. 19 people were injured in the attack. The terrorists confessed that they planned additional attacks, including a series of car bombings and shootings. U.S., European, and Arab diplomats are meeting in Paris for a French-led effort to revive the Israeli-Palestinian peace process. Neither Israel or the Palestinians are participating. Israel has dismissed the summit as doomed to fail because it does not involve direct talks between Israelis and the Palestinians. Makes sense. Israeli troops shot and killed a Palestinian woman who tried to stab a soldier at a checkpoint north of Jerusalem. 200 Palestinians and more than 20 Israelis have been killed since this wave of attacks by Palestinians began last September. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu will visit Russia Tuesday to discuss a wide range of international issues, including Syria, with Russian President Vladimir Putin. We'll talk about that maybe in a couple of weeks if that comes up. Two synagogues in Boston and one in Pawtucket were vandalized this week. Swastikas were spray painted on the buildings, and one building sustained minor damage. Police do not believe there is a connection between the three attacks. And finally, Anthony Graziano of Lodi, New Jersey, was found guilty of terrorism for vandalizing Jewish temples and firebombing a rabbi's home 4 years ago. Graziano showed no emotion as the jury's verdict was read. He faces 30 years to life in prison. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000, and visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. We have online Professor Carrie Nelson, who is a professor at University of Illinois, an expert on the BDS movement. And who will be coming and speaking in Detroit on June the 14th at Shari Tzedek. It's a co-sponsored by the JCRC of Metropolitan Detroit and other organizations. How are you today, Professor Nelson?
Well, I'm fine. Nice to talk with you.
Yeah, the pleasure is mine. For those people who have been in a cave since 2005 or so, could you tell us what is the impetus, the philosophy behind the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement?
Well, I think that the first thing to do is to ask ourselves, what do the major spokespersons for the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement say, and what do they write? And they're all very consistent, in fact, across the world. What they say is that Israel has no right to exist, that the Jewish state needs to be dissolved. Now, their methods for doing that vary, but they're really very consistent that their end, their goal, is not to modify Israeli government policy, which is something many of us might want to see happen, but rather to eliminate the state entirely. However, they organize in a different way. They tend on campuses and in religious communities and elsewhere to say, stand behind us in support of justice. And they offer slogans. Palestine will be free from the river to the sea. So they organize by way of very simplistic strategies, and they don't always say that, they don't always, in the organizing phase, they don't always talk about their ultimate goal of dissolving the Jewish state, but all the leaders make that abundantly clear. And BDS really starts around 2002 in the United States and Britain, but it has gradually picked up steam, especially over the last 2 years. And I suppose one would say that it's sort of metastasized over the last 2 years, because BDS now operates in really many different cultural and political domains. They have people who specialize in those different domains, like there are people who work in Christian churches who don't work in campuses. There are people on BDS who work in the financial services industry who don't necessarily work elsewhere. So it's now a kind of multifaceted or hydra-headed enterprise, and therefore fighting it takes a lot more work.
Okay. Professor Nell, is this one organized front, or is this like bunches of little individual cells that have sort of like mushroomed?
Well, it is an organized but diversified front. So you do have some of the BDS leaders move from arena to arena. So you'll find some of the same people speaking at an annual meeting of the Presbyterian churches, and you'll find some of those same people on campus. You'll find some of those same people visiting corporations and making their case. So it is an organized movement. But the next thing to say is that in each of those areas, the foot soldiers tend to be different. So the large number of people in some Protestant churches who support BDS doesn't particularly overlap with people on campus. And the people on campus are not likely to show up in a meeting of a major corporation to make a BDS case. But the leaders do move from domain to domain, and because of that, there's clearly organization, both nationally and internationally.
Okay, so then, would you say this is one of those questions which is a very fine line, the difference between anti-Israel and anti-Semitism? Would these leaders like just to make the world Judenrein?
Well, the leaders would like to make the Middle East Judenrein. That's pretty clear. I mean, just take one leader, maybe the single most prestigious faculty member, BDS faculty member of the United States. Her name is Judith Butler. She has a named chair at Berkeley, so, she's won international awards. I know her well, for better or worse. And she says that if the Jews in Israel really looked into their hearts, they would know that they were a diasporic people, and therefore they really don't want a state. If they really looked into their souls, they would just leave Israel, and Israel would be left to Arabs, Palestinians. So the net effect of that, which of course isn't going to happen, because Israelis will defend their country, they're not just going to get on banana boats and head back to Poland, is is to make the Middle East Judenrein. And someone like Omar Barghouti, another prominent leader, a Palestinian who actually lives in Israel, though he's not a citizen, but travels in the United States a lot, he clearly wants to eliminate the Jewish presence in the Middle East. Ordinary people on campus or ordinary people in the Presbyterian Church, they might support BDS without having those kind of strong feelings. What I try to say to people are two things about that issue. One, if you want to deny 6 or 7 million Jewish Israelis the right to political self-determination, the right to shape their own political future in a country of their own, that's an anti-Semitic project. And so I say to people, you may not realize that shipping all the Jews out of Israel was an anti-Semitic project, but it is. And you need to think about why you've signed on to an anti-Semitic project. Then the other thing you can say is that a lot of, quite often the arguments in favor of BDS echo long-standing anti-Semitic images and ideas. So it has, the BDS arguments have an historical embedding in anti-Semitism. So again, I say to people, well, you know, you're saying something that echoes things said from the Middle Ages on about Jews. And I realize, of course, that you aren't anti-Semitic, but shouldn't you be concerned that you're voicing anti-Semitic myths? That said, yes, are there people in the BDS movement who are anti-Semitic? Certainly. When I see them sort of just enraged at Israel beyond any rational basis, you know, I kind of look to anti-Semitism as an explanation. But, you know, the majority of people in the BDS movement are brainwashed and hoodwinked rather than being anti-Semitic.
Mm-hmm. Now, if you're just joining us, our guest today is Professor Carrie Nelson, who is a professor at University of Illinois, an expert on the boycott, sanctions, and divestment movement. Jews, unfortunately, I know this because have this collective paranoia. Like if somebody, like for example, I've heard it said that somebody got shortchanged by a cashier at a counter and accused the cashier of being anti-Semitic. You know, so maybe we're just, this idea of being wanting to get pushed into the sea, as the expression goes, is really just Jewish paranoia. Because what seems to be played in the news is the plight of the poor Palestinian, and they have rights too. And what's happening now since 1967 hasn't worked with the creation of Palestinian states and for the Jews to be able to live side by side with the Palestinians. So how do we address that then, Professor Nelson?
Well, yeah, great question. First of all, I think the Palestinians do have rights. I don't think that there was a Palestinian people in 1948. And I certainly don't think there was a Palestinian people in 1917 when the Balfour Declaration was disseminated. But I think, you know, over the years since 1948, and especially since 1967, a Palestinian people has come into existence. It's fair enough to say that if the Arab states had absorbed the Palestinians who fled Israel in 1948, rather than keeping many of them in refugee camps, that probably Palestinian national sentiment would not have coalesced. But the Arab states did keep refugees in refugee camps. And so a Palestinian national imperative and national ambitions have evolved, and I think there's nothing we can do about it. It's a reality. And I think that people that has evolved over, you know, a half a century or so now has rights to a state. You know, I support a two-state solution, and I think it is actually achievable, not overnight, but I think there are steps you could take toward achieving it. So my inclination is to recognize that Palestinians have rights. I recognize that they view 1948 as a tragedy. I don't. I view 1948 as a triumph, but they have their historical understanding. I'm sympathetic toward it, and to me it requires a solution of a separate state. And I think, you know, my view is that there are steps that can be taken in that direction short of final stage negotiations. You know, I don't have a lot of faith in negotiations at this point because they've failed over and over and over again. Sometimes the reasons they failed aren't widely known, but nonetheless they've failed. So, I just like to see small steps, modest steps toward giving the Palestinians a state of their own while absolutely guaranteeing Israeli security. And there's a lot that needs to be done to guarantee Israeli security. That has to be part of the package. So to me, I feel no contradiction in feeling sympathy toward both peoples, although, you know, I'm Jewish and my heart is with the Israelis. I still meet Palestinians and talk with them, and I want them to get a fair shake.
Okay, so since 2002, it seems like the efficacy of the BDS movement hasn't been very good. I'm reminded of, there was an incident, I don't know how many years ago already, was it 4 or 5 years ago, where there was a flash mob at some major supermarket in Princeton, New Jersey, and all these Princeton University students came and they did this whole flash mob thing protesting Sabra
Hummus.
And it was very cute, and actually sang a very nice song, and it was on YouTube, and I don't know how many hits it got, but it seems very much displaced because Sabra isn't a Jewish-owned company. It's owned by Pepsi,
right.
And, you know, yada, yada, yada. And then you look, is it really possible? I mean, talking about the laws of physics, a Ford car is 11% Israeli parts. Is it really a practical, functional thing that people should say, I'm not going to buy anything Israeli. I'm not going to invest in any company that has business in Israel. It doesn't seem like it's even possible, Professor Nelson.
Well, if what you want to do is boycott all products that have Israeli components, you know, then you got to give up your computer, you got to give up your iPhone, you don't have a laptop anymore. So, that's not realistic. And therefore, there is a real hypocritical component to the notion that, you know, you have triumphed over the world by refusing to eat Sabra hummus. I mean, that particular demonstration, which has taken place on about a dozen campuses, definitely is the single most ludicrous part of the BDS movement, right?
Mm-hmm.
People thumping their chests and feeling triumphant because they're not eating Sabra hummus. That's, you know, that's the most comical. What's serious about the BDS movement on campus is not the potential that they'll have any victories. I mean, for example, one of the things that happens on campuses is a debate over divesting from companies that do business in Israel. And some of those resolutions fail, some of those resolutions succeed, and the administration and the Board of Trustees, when the resolution passes, says, well, guess what? We don't do our investment policy based on what a couple of 100 undergraduates think we should do. We have a responsibility as adults, and, you know, you can pass whatever resolution you want. It's not going to have any impact. What happens with each of those debates is that they turn some students and some faculty against Israel. And some of those students go out and they become professionals, religious leaders, politicians, business people, et cetera, et cetera. And it's not a good thing that they have been turned into opponents of the Jewish state by those campus debates. That's the thing that matters, not the actual vote, but the way the BDS movement wins some hearts and minds. You know, when I was in Israel, I've been in Israel 4 times over the last 2 years, and I've talked about BDS with the Ministry of Strategic Affairs twice, and I've been on many campuses, and I've met with all the presidents of Israeli universities, not a lot of it. The rational people, I think, agree that BDS is no immediate strategic threat to Israel, but it's a long-term threat. If changes enough hearts and minds so as to affect U.S. policy, then it represents a risk. You know, we know in terms of statistics that overall the percentage of Americans, somewhere between 60% and 70%, that support Israel has remained constant over the last 5 years. However, the percentage of young Democrats who support Israel has declined, and the percentage of Republicans who support Israel has increased. So it's become a more divisive issue in American politics, and that's a bad thing. It doesn't mean that our military support for Israel is threatened. I don't think it is. But public policy could be affected as the demographics of the support for Israel change. So it's a force that has to be fought. I mean, in terms of your earlier question, is it merely paranoia about pushing the Jews into the sea? Well, not when BDS leaders say that's what they want. I mean, if they didn't say it outright, I suppose it's paranoia. But if they make those claims in print, they make those claims in speeches, and they can convince people of the righteousness of that cause, it's worrisome. The other thing to say about BDS is that, you know, we're coming up to the 50th anniversary of the Six-Day War next year. So I'm expecting BDS to organize behind opposition and protest to half a century of the occupation in a much more aggressive way than they have before. So I think next year is going to be a lot worse than any of the years we've encountered so far. And I think we have to educate ourselves and be ready to make a different kind of case, make a case for a two-state solution. I think that's the only way to go to confront BDS next year. I think they're going to put a lot of money into organizing on campus, in religious organizations, in financial service industries. Just over the last year and a half, BDS has completely changed its approach in financial service industries, and it's like a lot more clever than they were before. They used to show up at a company like IBM or TIA Cref, and they would say, divest from Israel. Don't have any investments in companies that do business in Israel. And often they don't say that anymore. Instead, they say, we've put together a wonderful package of progressive companies. With it, they don't do fossil fuels. Instead, they do alternative energy. These are green companies. These are great companies. We think you should invest. It just so happens that no company that does business in Israel is on the list of companies. So they never even mention Israel quite often now. Instead, they just push what they say is a progressive agenda as a way of trying to get people to pull out of Israeli investments. So it's a more sophisticated movement. It's got more people in it. I think it's a serious enterprise.
Mm-hmm. Sort of same thing like Yasser Arafat did when he changed his marketing from kill all the Jews to we are the oppressed people, the Palestinians. That's what it sounds like to me, Professor Nelson.
Right. Well, these marketing changes affect people. So
it's all marketing. It always has been. So you talk about Feinstein. Where's the money coming from the BDS movement?
Some people know. I mean, there's been a lot of work done on that. It hasn't been publicized. And all that I know for a fact is that a significant amount of the money that is funding BDS in the United States is coming from abroad.
Oh, that's pretty, that's only 3/4 of the world.
right. I mean, the estimate is that over the next year, BDS will be spending $10 million in California alone. In the Bay Area, there are about 130 different pro-BDS organizations, and the money is not all coming from bake sales. But exactly what countries are most involved, exactly how the money gets transmitted, I at least don't know. And no one that I know knows. Well, some people say they have the information, but they're not ready to release it. That said, I mean, when the information does get out, because I'm sure it eventually will, what difference does it make if we know that, say, Qatar or Saudi Arabia or Iran is the source of BDS funding? It'll piss people off. It'll convince some people that these are foreign governments trying to influence American policy. But in the end, it's not going to stop the flow of money. What it might do is shame wealthy Jews in the United States to contribute more to the anti-BDS fight. That's one thing that might happen from releasing the funding sources.
Okay.
And I should add that the funding sources in Europe are a little bit different. Because there are a number of European governments that give money to non-governmental organizations like churches, and some of those churches then pass on some of the money they've received from governments to BDS organizations. So in Europe, there's government money flowing through stages to BDS organizations. That really doesn't happen in the United States, and that's why, you know, one has to look elsewhere for the funding that flows into this country. And you know, I have no doubt whatsoever that most of it's coming from abroad.
Okay, if you're just joining us again, our guest is Professor Carrie Nelson, is a professor at University of Illinois, an expert on BDS. We'll be speaking at Shaare Tzedek for a community organization. That's June the 14th at 7:30 p.m. Shaare Tzedek is in Southfield, right on the Lodge and Bell Road. So now, to combat this, so getting a small group of Jewish students to stand on the other side of the street of a BDS protest really doesn't sound like it's going to do anything. What is the Jewish community is very organized. We have these things called federations, and there's even like a federation of federations, which is the General Assembly, which meets once a year. I was at the GA this year, and I kind of looked in on one of the BDS workshops. There was, I don't know how many thousands of people, but there was probably about 25 people sitting in this workshop listening. So it seems like the Jewish community has its head in the sand or isn't thinking that this is really important. But so then what practical things can be done then, Professor Nelson, to combat the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement?
Well, first of all, I think nationally at least, the federation do not have their head in the sand. I mean, I'm in contact with Federation leaders all the time, face-to-face with them. They're well-informed, and they're putting a lot of effort behind the anti-BDS fight. Do I think they should do more? Well, you know, I'm sure I'll never reach the point where I won't say they should do more. I mean, this is kind of my gig, so, you know, I see it from that perspective. But I think that the Federation is actually well-focused on the issues. Okay, so what more can be done? Well, first of all, there's a tremendous amount of ignorance almost everywhere that BDS is making its case. I like to cite the case. The Modern Language Association is the professional organization for people who teach literature and people who teach foreign languages. January 2014, there was a motion to boycott Israeli universities at their annual meeting. There are hundreds of people in the room to discuss this, and the first thing the motion says is, Israel prevents students from Gaza from leaving to study elsewhere because Israel controls all of Gaza's borders. So we got up and we said, well, you know, if you look at a map of Gaza, you'll find that there's this funny country south of Gaza called Egypt, and that Egypt controls the Rafah crossing where Palestinians have typically left if they're going to study abroad. It's not Israel, it's Egypt. So there was a big discussion in the front of the room whether to agree that Egypt was on Gaza's southern border or whether the proposals of the resolution were right that Israel was on Gaza's southern border. And I got up and I said, you know, we really ought to give these people a map of the Middle East so they could find Gaza. So, and these were faculty members, right?
Supposedly smart people, supposedly, yes.
Yeah, supposedly. They're certainly earning enough money that suggests that they're smart. So there is tremendous amounts of ignorance. And you can fight ignorance with information. I mean, what can you do? What can they do when you show them a map that says Egypt south of Gaza and then the Rafah crossing is the main entry-exit point? It kind of says what needs to be said. So there's a lot of that where you can disseminate accurate information, and that sometimes can take the wind out of their sails. The last 6 months have shown a lot of claims about health conditions on the West Bank and in Gaza, and the factual information disputes those claims. So, you know, you counter the disinformation with real information, and you can do it quite calmly. I never raise my voice in kind of debating BDS issues. They often do. I just say, well, you know, let's look at the facts. You know, here's some information. What do you think about this information? And, you know, sometimes that helps to win the day. It's also true, however, that in some disciplines on campus, the disciplines have almost been taken over by BDS support and antagonism toward Israel. So you have some disciplines, Middle Eastern studies, anthropology, literature, where the campus consensus in those disciplines is intensely anti-Israel. And there, I think you need more than facts. You need alternative education. You need courses that offer a more balanced perspective. You need more speakers that offer a balanced perspective. This during earlier this year, when there was a considerable battle over BDS on the Vassar campus, just to choose one example, there was a lot of interest amongst faculty and students at Vassar because they'd had one pro BDS anti-Israel speaker after another to bring in some alternatives, but we could find no one on the bloody Vassar campus to schedule a room for a pro-Israeli speaker to offer an alternative point of view. So some of these campuses have made the pro-Israeli constituents so gun-shy and so afraid of speaking out and standing up that it becomes very difficult to make headway there, but obviously we need to do so. So, you know, I think there's no shortage of productive ways of fighting BDS in point of fact, but you don't always have the troops on the ground to do that work.
Okay, that's going to wrap it up for us. If you missed it, so you can listen to it later online. But our guest today is Professor Carrie Nelson, a professor of University of Illinois and expert on the BDS movement. We'll be coming to Shaarei Tzedek on June the 14th. That's a week and change away at 7:30 p.m. We'll be talking about BDS. I believe it's a panel. I think you're talking with other people. Is that correct?
I think I'm doing both. I'm giving a talk on my own, and then I think there's going to be a panel.
Okay, and that is free of charge. There's no admission, and there's no cost to admission. We want
probably,
to thank
probably there'll be something to eat for free too.
Maybe, you know how Jews are. Gastro Judaism. You don't come unless there's a dessert at least. But anyway, I don't know. I didn't see it in the advertising. But thank you so much, Professor Nelson, and continued success. And keep us apprised, please.
Thanks for having me on.
Okay, it's been our pleasure. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
Stop paying more than your fair share of property tax now. I'm Stephen Poulter, attorney at law and president of Express Property Tax Appeals. Right now, your commercial property tax assessments are in the mail. Like many commercial property owners, you're probably paying unnecessary and exorbitant property taxes, potentially costing you hundreds of thousands of dollars every year. Express Property Tax Appeals can help. I recently reduced one of my clients' property tax values by $2 million, realizing $250,000 in real tax dollar savings. I can do the same for you. If you're a commercial property owner, manager, or broker and are tired of paying more than your fair share of property tax, call Express Property Tax Appeals now at 855-LOW-TAX-9 or online at lowtax9.com. That's 855-LOW-TAX-9 or online at lowtax9.com. You have nothing to lose except your looming property tax burden. I'm Stephen Poulter with Express Property Tax Appeals, and I look forward to saving you money on your property taxes.
The Art Studio of Oak Park is now accepting students. Whether you're a real beginner or have been at it for a lifetime, the Art Studio of Oak Park is something for you. All levels welcome, all ages welcome. Private tutoring or small friendly classes. Flexible hours available. The Art Studio of Oak Park is very affordable. Make your life better. Put art into your life. The Art Studio of Oak Park offers lessons in a strictly kosher environment. Call today, 248-542-5087. That's 248-542-5087. It's great having an art room right in the neighborhood.
Fleming, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. We are in the musical part of our show today, and I think I wrote down the wrong song. Ben, what song do we have come up next? What is this? Shalshelis. Okay, so that's up next. Shalshelis and the Maccabees is next. So, and this song is called L'man Achai. Let's listen in. Na 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 na
Assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale.
Hey, Shel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. We have up now something that has become a classic traditional Jewish song. Well, it's only maybe 15 years old, but it's there. This is Schlock Rock doing a cappella together with the Maccabees, and this is called Minion Man. Let's listen.
Jews in this town. He said to me, there used to be a minion around. But one of us passed away and we've been feeling down. Yet now it seems as though another Jew has been found. Won't you stay with us for Shabbos, Minion Man?
I step off the bus in Mobile, Alabama. The sun was slowly setting on the bay. Clock on a summer Friday afternoon. Shabbos was an hour away. I walked around the town wondering what to do. Shabbos is no time to be feeling blue. Then I saw a man who looked the same way too. I was quite relieved to find the fellow Jew.
but one of us passed away and we've been feeling down. Yet now it seems as though another Jew has been found. Won't you stay with us for Shabbos, Minyan Man?
We walk down Winston Avenue a block then two more. Went into a shop that red closed on the door.
There was a minion in the back of a hardware store.
Nine men waiting for one more. We ushered in the Shabbos with a beautiful song. The chazan had a voice that was clear and strong. We sang out as one all Shabbos long. And Marit came again, I had to be moving on.
I asked the man, I saw how many Jews in the town. He said to me, there used to be a minion around. But one of us passed away and we've been feeling down. Yet now it seems as though another Jew has been found. Won't you stay with us for a Shabbos?
Some moved on, but the back of the store still remembers the song. The nine men who waited till one came along.
How Shabbos was carried on a song.
Whoa. I asked the man, I saw how many Jews in this town. He said to me, there used to be a minion around. But one of us passed away and we've been feeling down. Yet now it seems as though another Jew has been found. Won't you stay with us for Shabbos, Minyan Man? Oh, won't you stay with us for Shabbos, Minyan Man? Please, won't you stay with us for Shabbos, Minyan Man?
Do you or someone you know have an addiction to opiates? Ready to take your life back but don't have the time for a long inpatient program? MDS Drug Detox is a team of physicians with extensive experience in the field of rapid drug detox under anesthesia. MDS is the nation's only rapid opiate detox under anesthesia facility with the same doctors, RNs, and certified paramedics attending the entire drug detox process. MDS Drug Detox is safe and effective. Their goal is to provide the best, the safest, and the most economical way to free you from your addiction. MDS uses the highest standards of care and the best FDA-approved medications. MDS Drug Detox understands what your concerns are. Make the call today, 888-637-6968, or go online to www.mdsdrugdetox.com. That's 888-637-6968, MDS Drug Detox.
Hey, Shul Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. We got time for one more song. This is the Meshorim Choir, a cappella, of course. And the song is called Bum Bum.
Bum bum ba 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 bum bum ba ba bum bum ba 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 bum bum ba
yashed le goya yo arzo is loy loy de sato ki le isro vai la khun sato ve ya pul gam khun sato de loy de sato yashed le goya yo arzo is loy loy de sato ki le isro vai la khun sato ve ya pul gam khun sato bam 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 she bam bam bam
Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurances accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Herr Schulfenman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. This week we begin the Book of Numbers, Numbers 1-1, with a portion of Bamidbar in the desert. That's where we find ourselves now. We also find ourselves that next week, immediately following the Shabbos, will be the two-day holiday out here in the diaspora of Shavuos, known in English as the Holiday of the Pentecost, which means the absolute divine revelation of the five books, penta meaning five. I'm not sure what cost means because it's Greek to me, quite literally. So usually there is a prohibition of preparing on the Sabbath for the weekday. Shabbos, the Sabbath, is the holiest day of the year, the holiest day of the week. And its holiness surpasses all other days of the year except for Yom Kippur. And Yom Kippur can never fall out on a Sunday, so you're never going to prepare Shabbos for Yom Kippur. Yet, here it is, the day before Shavuos, which would be called Erev Yom Tov, which means the day before the holiday, happens to be a Shabbos. So those things which you would want to do in preparation are going to get pushed back to Friday. Those people who, for example, we are in this quasi-mourning period, there are people who are very careful. They don't get their hair cut until the day before. So they can get it, you know, 2 days before on Friday, for example. That's a small thing. But how is it then that we're supposed to prepare? Because you can't prepare anyway because it's Shabbos. Preparation is a mental state. I know whenever we're having a function, like in Jewish Ferndale, for example, and my wife, she should live to be 120, needs to prepare stuff, food or whatever. So usually when she says, I am confident that we have prepared enough, I know, for example, that I'm probably going to be eating leftovers for about 4 days. So it's the state of mind of preparedness rather than the physical things that actually need the preparing at that point. And what are we doing to prepare for the holiday? We're reading the portion of Numbers, of Bamidbar, which is a series of censuses. The idea of a census is that it tells us how many there are. But why do we care how many of anything there is? I tell people, how much garbage is in your trash can? You would have no clue because you don't care. The fact that the Almighty said that we need to count a census, and in Israel, actually, they perform a census every year, and the results are released on Israeli Independence Day, because when God mandated the counting of the Jewish people, he showed the world the importance of the Jewish people. Once now that importance had been established, and we know that we're here because God wants us to be here. So now, getting the Torah, that's just like the next step. Now that God wants us to be here, well, what do we want to do? What does he want to do? What does he want us to do? Well, for that we have the manual. That's the Torah. And we receive it says the custom is that everybody go to synagogue next Sunday, that's the 12th, to hear the reading of the Ten Commandments. And our attitude should be that we're getting the Ten Commandments like we did 3,328 years ago. With the same pomp and circumstance, we stand up, we face the Torah reading, and to understand that we're getting it new. It's like just like on Rosh Hashanah, we're getting it new. It's the new year for the getting of the Torah, which then gives us the strength to function now in a new and improved, a better year, because this year, of course, is better than last year. If it wouldn't be, what do we need to be here for? Speaking of being here for, well, we got a commercial coming up, and don't go away. We got this story at the coming up right now. Well, don't go away. You're listening to the Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Specs Howard from the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. We're happy to sponsor the Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding for the Jewish Hour comes from its sponsors, it's listeners like you that help keep the Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to the Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. That's 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. Your help is greatly appreciated.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. Want to get in touch with me? Easiest way? RabbiFinman.com. We have archived editions of the show. You can contact me. We have archived editions of the other things that I'm doing. Go to Rabbi Finman, check it out. You can also check out, if you're checking out things on the web, check out www.JewishFerndale.com. Also, a sister project of the Jewish Hour, and see what's going on over there in Ferndale. You don't have to be a Ferndalian to be part of Jewish Ferndale. Go check it out. There's also the very important donations page. It's June. We haven't paid for May. Go to the routine. It's all PayPal, yada, yada, yada. I'd rather tell the story right now than to sit and talk about getting the show paid for. So go to RabbiFinman.com, click on the donations page. It's all very simple. And I guarantee that giving to the Jewish Hour will increase blessings in your life. For sure, 100%, no doubt. The story. we really don't have time for the story, so we're going to have to save the story for 2 weeks. But the major point of the story was that in order to receive the Torah, and in order to combat one's enemies, which relates into the beginning of the BDS thing, the person has to look into themselves and realize that if we're not haters, the expression is the face that you see in the water, show in the water reflects back. If we can remove hatred from within us and anger from within us, then we deserve to get the Torah. Our enemies are no longer our enemies because we've been able to affect them. That's going to do it for today. We're glad you tuned in. We hope it's a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope it's a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you have an awesome Shavuos. I'll be back in 2 weeks, but for those people who are not Jewish, we'll have wonderful, real Jewish music to listen to for the hour. Kabbalah Satera B'Simcha B'Pnimius. It should all be good things for Shavuos. Take care. Your terror, she's not.